What if there was one simple pill that could help support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function? Well, introducing new and improved Green Tea CR Phytosome formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's potent, clinically tested, and it works to promote your energy, vitality, cardio health, immunity, and antioxidant defense. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you today to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Even better, call now and get a second free bottle. Purity's B12 Energy Melts. That's your second free gift. Again, for your free bottles of Green Tea CR and B12 Energy Melts, call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Again, 1-800-218-6030. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about plastic surgery with a specific view towards hair restoration. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in this part two of today's discussion with Dr. Gary Linkoff. Gary is a board-certified plastic surgeon. His work is featured at Rebalance, which is a new center in Midtown Manhattan. Tell us a little bit about Rebalance, Gary, and why you're part of that. It's a multidisciplinary practice. It's not just a solo office, you know, where people just see you. There's a whole range of services that actually support the work you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So the name of my specific practice is, it's actually City Facial Plastics, and then Rebalance is basically the center that houses my practice, and we have a fully accredited operating room here at the center, and we have many other specialists that also have are basically looking to improve people's wellness and function as a team, so that you come
there's
to one
nutritional
place.
Services. There's you know, various types of cosmetic facial procedures that don't involve your surgical intervention.
That's right, and even sexual health and musculoskeletal treatments. So trying
identical to hormone replacement mm-hmm. surgery would be part of that rejuvenation process.
Yes. Trying to improve the patient from the inside and out. You know, there's a limit to what my services can accomplish, and I think it's very important to be part of a team that can treat many different aspects that might be bothersome to a patient, some of which they might not even realize initially.
Gary, short of going under the knife under anesthesia, you know, scalpel procedures, mm-hmm. Are there more conservative procedures that can help patients have a more youthful appearance?
Yes, absolutely. Everything from the hair to the face to the neck has non-surgical options to it. So that could be things like different pills that you take, different creams that you put on your skin, different types of lasers or chemical peels that rejuvenate the skin and the subcutaneous tissues and the muscle that lies beneath it. And there are also injectables that are done too. So I offer Botox, as do most doctors, I would say, in the country now, as well as injectable fillers. So I actually teach courses on injectables for physicians who are looking to get into the aesthetic space. So that was part of my core training. I'm very comfortable with different types of fillers, and so I teach courses. And so I think there is a place for it. I think that these days it's being overdone in general, and so we're getting a lot of very artificial appearing people. So sometimes you don't know if it was from their plastic surgery or that someone who maybe shouldn't have been injecting them injected them, you know, in the face with different types of products. So it's sometimes hard to know exactly what caused the appearance. But like you said earlier, Dr. Hoffman, I think we all know when someone's been overdone and just looks unnatural.
Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the potential for hair restoration. You know, what type of clients do you see? What problems do you see? And, you know, what are some of the options?
So I would divide it into... First, I think the best way to divide it is to just into male and female gender, because the problems that they're presenting with specifically related to the hair are very different. For most men, They're not experiencing any rapid shedding or any scarring problems of the scalp. For most men, it's an androgenic alopecia, which is a hereditary type of hair loss that you know, eventually will usually affect most guys. And so they're coming in at different ages, I would say starting as early as in their early 20s, with different degrees of receding hairlines and also losing hair in the crown. And so we're always gauging their age, their expectations, and how good their donor hair quality is, meaning the hairs that we can pick from to move them to a place where they don't have hair, where they would like to have more hair. So that's like the most typical male type of patient. For women, it's very different. Women will come in also all different ages, but usually there's a much more intensive workup that we go through, looking at different hormonal imbalances in blood work, looking at thyroid levels, iron, ferritin, vitamin D levels. All these things can really impact on women's hair, and usually more so than for men. For women, the most common type of hair loss is still androgenic alopecia, but there are many other types of hair loss. Some are related to stress, some are familial, others are from different scarring problems with scalp, and so the treatments are very different. And that's why we do a more aggressive investigation before offering anything, especially like a transplant, which is more permanent and really only reserved to a select group of women that would qualify for that, where it would be the appropriate treatment.
When you do the transplants, you harvest hair from one area and then you put them back in. Mm-hmm. And so how do you avoid that cornrow appearance that sometimes is such a telltale sign of hair replacement?
Absolutely. So it used to be that the punches that were obtained from the donor site where the hairs are coming from, that those the size of the punch was actually 4 millimeters. And just to put it into perspective, the size of our current punch on average is about 0.8 or 0.9 millimeters. Mm. So by decreasing the size of the punch with just advances in technology, we're able to deliver a much more natural result. So you're not transplanting some hair with like this massive island of skin around it. So your donor site has less scarring, and your recipient site, meaning where the hairs are going, just looks much more natural because it's a much finer look. And you can artistically sort of create that hairline much better than having this kind of cornrow, large punch size appearance.
Is hair restoration painful? It looks like it might be. The scalp's got a lot of nerves in it. And is it very time consuming? Do you have to go in for, you know, session after session after session to accomplish a cosmetically acceptable result?
It is time consuming and labor intensive. It's something that's not just done by the surgeon. There's usually a team of technicians that are highly trained in performing different steps of the transplant that are involved with the surgeon to provide care for the patient. We do all of our transplants under local anesthesia, meaning usually lidocaine injections, and some PO sedation, so typically a Valium and or an Ambien, where folks can be a little bit sleepy and a little more relaxed. But it's very comfortable. No one ever complains that, oh, I spent all day getting a transplant and I was miserable. Everyone seems to be very content with the level of anesthesia and sort of relaxation during the process. So it's very safe. It's very comfortable. It is labor intensive and it does take time. Typical hair transplant sort of average number of hairs for the scalp, let's say, can take a full day, so about 10 hours of work. And so it is a lot of sort of laying around, but we usually will stop and give the patient a break for lunch. So it's kind of a nice get to know your clinicians and your surgeon very well. During that day. And then occasionally, if it's a larger case, we'll bring patients back the following day for sort of an additional set of grafting. And then that would be it. And then you wait 10 to 12 months for complete hair growth. And if at that time patients desire additional hair, then we talk about a second procedure. But for most patients, they're receiving one transplant and not needing one ever again. But some people want just more density, and so they undergo additional procedures years apart.
I've heard of PRP, platelet-rich plasma, as an option for patients with minor hair loss. I mean, obviously, if you're, if you've got that billiard ball kind of hairline, that's not going to work. But for areas of local thinning, patchy alopecia, perhaps, that could be helpful.
Yes, definitely. So, in addition to some of the pills and creams available for hair, there are some other non-surgical options. So one of which is the PRP, as you mentioned, Dr. Hoffman. The other one, and I'll go into that a little bit more, but there's also scalp micropigmentation. So this is actually a temporary tattooing of the scalp, which can be really nice for a few things. So one is actually to cover up scarring. So if someone has a long scar, either from an old strip procedure, meaning where you take a strip of scalp, which we don't really do anymore, we take it one by one, single hairs at a time. But it used to be that there was an entire strip from the back of the scalp that was removed, and then those patients have these long scars. So you can do the tattooing.
I'm thinking of my turf, my garden lawn turf. They mm-hmm. actually would, arrive with a truck with the, the whole peeled off turf and then just drop it in. That's the way it used to be done?
Yes, pretty much. And so those patients will sometimes benefit from the scalp micropigmentation. It's also nice after or before a transplant where patients find that sometimes it's not enough density for them, and you can still see their lighter colored, say, mm-hmm. scalp shining through the hair. So you can go in there with this scalp micropigmentation and really create a nice change for them. And there's actually no anesthesia necessary. It's very sort of superficial depositions of ink, and it doesn't go to the depth of the hair bulb, so the hair follicles are all safe from it. So it's just a nice option for people to know about. It used to be done just by tattoo artists many years ago, and then now it's sort of entered into the hair world for surgeons and for well-trained hair technicians. So just something that we offer as well, and I think people should know about. For PRP, it involves a blood draw. So we draw up usually 20 cc's of blood, spin it down in a special centrifuge to extract out the plasma with the platelets. Those that platelet-rich plasma is then injected into the scalp after the scalp is properly numbed. And by doing so, you can definitely see improvements in hair growth, anywhere from, I would say, percentage-wise, maybe 20 to 30% improvement. It lasts for anywhere from 3 to 6 months per injection. And then obviously if you get serial injections, usually you get prolonged effect. There's really good data in the literature to support doing a scalp PRP. PRP is also being used on the face for something like people may have heard of vampire facelift that Kardashian has gotten. So the data for PRP in the face is actually very weak and isn't necessarily any better than just doing microneedling or any other type of trauma to the facial skin. But on the scalp, PRP has really had nice results in the literature. So definitely something that our patients enjoy. And it's not an uncomfortable procedure. It takes about 1 hour.
Gary, you probably attend all the conferences and you take all kinds of online continuing education courses. Where do you see the future of hair restoration? Because still, what you're describing, it's somewhat of an arduous process. And now they're talking about stem cells and, that whole area is really regenerative medicine. With regard to hair, is an area that is kind of like the holy grail of hair restoration.
Yeah, so I think there are two different areas that are growing at the same time, and hopefully there'll be a synergy between them as they really advance. So one is the technology for hair transplantation. So there is a robot that some people use for transplants. It's called the ARTIS, and right now it's limited to just helping you with removing hairs from the back of the scalp. But if you have a good team of technicians, it's completely unnecessary.
It just automates the process. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But there are a lot of limitations. For example, it has a sharp punch, mm-hmm. the way that it enters the scalp, whereas our instrument that we use has an oscillating punch that's much more gentle on the hairs. The second thing is that the robot does not perceive lighter colored hairs. Mm. So there's a limitation there. If you have someone with a gray hair, you cannot use the robot. And the third, I mean, it's just very expensive. It's about $300,000 to purchase. Okay. And then fourth is it takes up an entire room in your office. Yeah. So most people don't, even I know some hair surgeons have the machine and just don't use it because they find that it's just inefficient. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, ideally the robotics will continue to expand and develop. And as it does, hopefully it'll make the process of transplantation much more automated and more helpful. But we're really pretty far from that now. And the other area is like you said, cloning and tissue engineering. So ideally, you would be able to extract out one hair follicle with the bulb, mm-hmm. and in a laboratory, expand out those structure for the patient and multiply it, you know, to have thousands.
Sort of build them a whole new head of hair and then or apply it. In some way.
Yeah, just have an unlimited supply, but again, there's no cloning for hair on the near horizon. I mean, we'll see. Maybe I would say at least 5 years from now, at a minimum, mm-hmm. we would get the technology like that. So as robotics advances and the cloning technologies, you know, hopefully that will ultimately improve hair restoration. But like you said, for now, it's still, you know, a little bit of an archaic process. But even in today's world, there are certain techniques and certain devices that are much more effective than others.
Gary, what about some forms of natural therapy to support recovery? I know that some plastic surgeons advocate the use of bromelain or certain healing nutrients to facilitate a better outcome, reduce the bruising, improve swelling. Is this something you employ in your practice?
Well, I do. I recommend Arnica to patients, Arnica Montana. I think the data is honestly mixed on the use of Arnica. I think the data is weak on Arnica for topical application. But if someone were to take the pills of Arnica, the data is better for that. So, you know, the randomized trials that have been done go sort of both ways on whether or not Arnica really helps. But I think it is helpful to provide some supplementation in the recovery phase. There are also some other agents that are kind of newer on the horizon for plastic surgery. I actually wrote an article with Dr. Mike Nyack out of St. Louis on this. It was published in the Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery Journal just last year on using tranexamic acid, mm-hmm. which can decrease bruising. And it's mm-hmm. been
that's, that's Trentil, isn't it? That's the thing that's used for people with claudication, if I'm not.
That's right. You know, it's been used also in the trauma world. Mm-hmm. And, okay. And intraoperatively, like IV, to reduce blood loss. And there are some early case series that show that it really is helpful for different types of facial surgeries. So that's kind of a newer agent now that people are looking into. And it's, you know, there are like pills of that agent, but I don't think that anyone's using that yet. For plastic surgery, it's more like it's being instilled into the different solutions. For example, the lidocaine solution. Some people will add the tranexamic acid. I haven't started doing it yet, but I'm definitely strongly considering it. Mike Nyack has some experience and just started doing that about 8 months ago, and has seen less bruising after surgery. So that's an option for sure.
Gary, you're located in New York City, but is your practice sort of a destination practice? I mean, say someone in Wichita, Kansas may say, well, you know, I'm not that confident about the folks in my community. I'd like to come to New York for surgery, but it presents a bit of a logistic problem because I'm going to have downtime and recovery time and, you know, maybe I should just stay home. Is there a way that patients can come in from out of town and they'll be okay with this procedure?
Yeah, for most surgeries that I do, absolutely, out of town patients are welcome. There are a number of hotels immediately around us that are very comfortable and well regarded. The only question is how long someone should stay in town
get in a plane or something with the subject to the problems associated with blood clots and, you know, the changes in pressure and that kind of thing.
Exactly. So certain procedures that I do, like, for example, rhinoplasty and facelifts, I would not want someone flying, 2 days later. Mm-hmm. So that would be the type of surgery where you really have to commit to spending about a week in Manhattan or in the New York City area.
You have to come in for follow-up just to make sure everything's healing properly, so on.
Exactly. That would be the right way to do it, absolutely. There are certain other more minor, both surgical and non-surgical treatments that patients can feel very comfortable going back same day even, and even getting sometimes their sutures removed in other parts of the country. There are colleagues of mine, and we sort of do it for each other. If a patient of mine or of theirs needs sutures removed that sort of flew in from out of town, we're happy to accommodate those patients. So sometimes I can connect them to a colleague in a different state for something like that. So absolutely, for the larger procedures that are more involved, I would say that it's best to stick around for about a week. For smaller procedures, it's safe to sometimes fly back same day or the next day, including for a hair surgery.
Gary, can you give me some information about your practice and about Rebalance?
Oh, absolutely. So the best way to, you mean in terms of kind of getting in touch and asking questions?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Presumably there's a website and there's a way to connect.
Yes. So my practice's website is cityfacialplastics.com. And I have an Instagram that many people now follow, and it's at DR for doctor, Dr. Gary NYC. So pretty easy to find that way. So some patients actually find me through online, through Instagram, through Facebook, and sometimes even direct message me. But on the website, City Facial Plastics, there is a phone number right at the top. Patients can even schedule online directly through the website. They don't even need to call in if they don't want to, or they can call the number to schedule. And then Rebalance, newyorkcity.com is the website for the space that I'm in, for the sort of integrative wellness approach that we had talked about before. So that is the website for that.
Rebalancenyc.com.
Correct.
Okay. And the spelling of your name? L-I-N-K-O-V.
Exactly.
Last name. Mm-hmm. Gary's the easy part. Congratulations on, a marvelous career preparation for the work that you do.
Thank you.
You know, as someone who is trained in medicine, I'm in awe of what plastic surgeons have to undergo to reach a level of competence before they can practice. So by the time they practice, they're usually, what, about 65 years old? No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Well, more than half of that.
Fortunately, you were a prodigy, and you completed medical school at the age of 17, and here you are. So that's great.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, listen, thanks for informing our audience. Aesthetics is certainly an important area of medicine, and I think you're destined to be a leader in this field. With your training and orientation. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ron. Thank you again for having me, and to all your guests for listening.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. That was Dr. Gary Linkov, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for details. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.